HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
This is Margaret McCraw. You're listening to Business Life Works, produced by HealthyLife.net. And today we're here talking with Lorraine Justice. She's a PhD and the author of the new book called The Future of Design. Lorraine, can I hear you? Are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you,
okay,
Margaret.
Good. And the rest of the title of your book is The Future of Design, Global Product Innovation in a Complex World. Today our show is going to be talking about is our smart home spying on us? And that's really a pretty important topic. There's been a lot of information out there in the market, some Netflix movies. I know it's caused me to really pause and think about what data I'm providing unknowingly to others, and is that data I want to provide to others, and is it somehow impacting me? Am I at risk for others taking my identity? Not that we want to energize it, but sometimes you just have to be aware and open so that you make good choices, and that's what I want to do today, Lorraine, by having you on the show with us, is to help us make good, informed choices about our data and to be knowledgeable about smartphones and smart TVs and computers and what they might be accessing that we don't know about. And that's what your book is all about, right?
Absolutely. And in the field of design, we look out for the consumer. We try to design the best possible interfaces and products for the user, and that includes services as well. And that's, you know, medical equipment or home computer equipment, whatever. But we're finding out that a lot of our data is being collected and sold.
Yes. Well, let me give our listeners a little bit more information about you, and then I'm going to have you talk with us a little bit about your interest in this topic. So Lorraine Justice, PhD, is a former dean and now a professor in the School of Design at the Rochester Institute of Technology in Rochester, New York. She's also a TED speaker, a consultant, and an expert in design, lifestyle, and technology. She's also an expert in design for China, having lived in Asia for 7 years and serving as dean of the Hong Kong Polytechnic Institute. So you have quite a diverse background. What is your PhD in, Lorraine?
It's in communication, so I really can't make any mistakes today.
I hear you. So, tell us a bit about this whole topic in terms of how you get involved and why it's so important for us to be aware of our data and where it's going and how it's being accessed.
Well, this all started with a CPAP, and I think some of the viewers might know this is a device that you use at night to help you breathe through the night a little bit better. And when I learned that the data from my CPAP was going directly to the insurance company, that just freaked me out a little bit. I mean, I knew Facebook was collecting data and claiming they owned everything, and I knew that other devices were eavesdropping on us at home, and I knew that there was a greater number of people who were tackling those problems. But when I heard this about the data going right to the insurance company rather than the doctor, not may go to the doctor too, but the reason it was going to the insurance was for compliance reasons. In other words, if you have that device and you're not using it to their specifications, I think basically it was 4 hours a night, they could either take the machine away or charge you for the machine or whatever. And it was the whole idea of compliance that really got to me, especially in the medical arena.
Right. So talk about that a little bit more. When you say compliance, because not everybody knows what that really means.
Yeah.
It airs around the world. So
I think this is, you know, I've heard compliance in relation to medical things where if you do not do what a doctor prescribes, or if you don't do take medication the way, whatever it is, you are not in compliance, and your insurance may be able to come back and say, we're not supporting you for health. And I really feel like this could be down the road in a larger scale. It's just wrong because we don't know what situations are with people, individuals. And it's just another thing that, you know, we can lose control of.
Well, you know, it's kind of, I've worked in healthcare for years, and it's a kind of the flip side of the incentive programs that are out there. If you do certain things, you lose a certain amount of weight, you do this or that, then they'll reimburse for some of the wellness programs, the prevention programs. And this is somewhat of the reverse of that, that if you don't do certain things,
right,
they won't pay for your services. Now, that's not happening yet, though, correct? You're just anticipating that that could be in the future, correct?
Well, I was pretty much threatened that I got a call and said, you know, gee, Lorraine, in fact, this is what flipped me on. They said, Lorraine, you're not using your CPAP. And I thought, how do they know this thing is sitting next to my bed? And I was on the phone looking into my bedroom thinking, oh, my gosh, these people know when I'm sleeping and where and how many hours a night.
So and that was the insurance company that called you?
Yes, it was the company who gave me the device that said the insurance company had contacted them.
Right.
And so that just set off an alarm, and I thought, you know, this is just amazing. I understand that people may not get better if they're not compliant, but
right,
I think it's wrong if it's just another excuse to you know, I want to say deny people health care.
Well, do they really have the right to know that information, that personal information,
right,
without at least telling you?
Right.
And they didn't tell you did that.
I don't know that every insurance company is doing this, but I know that mine apparently has.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to alert people to that. And then when we look at the broader problem of our data going in, you know, it's, and what's recorded and how it's there forever. You know, if you have someone who smoked when they were 18 and now they're, you know, 60 or 70, they are, even if they haven't smoked in 50 years, they are still branded as a smoker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so this data hangs around, and it's very difficult to change it.
When you say they're branded as a smoker, by who?
By the medical
By the insurance
community companies? Pardon me?
By the insurance companies?
Oh, yes, them as well.
Or hospitals,
well,
or wherever their
yes,
medical history might be with their doctor?
Absolutely. Somewhat years ago, when someone started out with their doctor and they were asked, did you ever smoke? And if someone says yes, it stays on there forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, you know, getting a driver's ticket where it gets erased from your history after a while.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this stuff just stays around. And when I looked at the data being collected now, that just made me a little bit more cautious about data, what's being recorded, where is it going. And then the other thing is when the economists said data is the new oil, companies started to scramble to see how could they make this a data revenue.
Interesting. Lorraine?
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead. No, I think, you know, what's great is the people who learned about Facebook and a lot of our social media and are calling attention to that, It's a great thing. Now, here in the United States, we protect, like, the protect our privacy and our data. That's not true in other parts of the world. Some people just consider, but they're living in a different culture and different environment. You know, the people in Europe have health care that comes along with their pension and so on. You could say we have Medicare or so on. But the costs are so high in the West. It's a risk, I think, for the average consumer to have all their data out there for the insurance companies.
So tell us what else is going on. What other products are picking up data for us? I know from looking at some of your materials, and I doubt that our listeners know this, but some of the new toilet seats coming on the market can actually take your blood pressure. So yes, where does this data go, and are people aware that the toilet seats are taking their blood pressure?
Well, this came from actually at RIT, where I'm a professor. A team had invented a toilet seat that will take your blood pressure. And it's brand new. We don't know, you know, where this is going to go. But it's really a great thing because it's for people who have congestive heart failure possibly or, you know, that kind of thing. So these types of sensors and tracking can just be fabulous. But the thing is, we don't know where that data will go. If it goes to the doctors, that's fine. I think we have less trust around if our data goes to an insurance company, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we never know when things like pre-existing conditions can come back to bite us again. And, you know, so it's very complex, and we have to speak up. We have to ask a lot of questions and really kind of guard what we have so far.
Yes. Yes. So would you like to tell us about some other products that, you know, are collecting our personal data? Like, how about the smart TV? Is that collecting data? I've understood, I've heard that it does collect data from an IT consultant, that even if it's turned off but it's still plugged in, the smart TV is collecting data. I've heard the same thing about cell phones collecting data, that unless they're powered off, even though you're not using them, if they're still on and not powered off, that they are constantly collecting data, personal data.
Yes. You know, the thing that I had heard was about the cameras on our computers and how people could access that, even though we had our, you know, computer off. I'm not sure. I haven't had any personal experience with that, but it's something I'd want to check into. And the other thing is we know that Alexa is always listening, and I'll give you a funny example of that. In 1990, my husband and I named our daughter Alexa, and poor girl, and we were visiting a friend's house, and they asked us how Alexa was doing, our daughter. And all of a sudden, their thermostat started talking and giving the current temperature. And it was so bizarre because it was listening. It was listening to our conversation. And they were asking about my daughter, but their Alexa system started working. So, crazy stuff. But I think now that people are more aware of it, they're going to be I think more critical of people who want to collect data or use it in the wrong way. But in our homes, you want to know if there is a unit in your TV that is transmitting data back somewhere, and also with your computer.
Well, how do you find these things out?
Well, when you're buying something, you can ask. I learned about the CPAP information going back because there's a modem inside that connects to our wireless in our home system that sends the data back. So when I checked the box that said, yes, you can collect my data, which I did, I didn't realize that it was coming from a piece of hardware and software in that product to transmit back, and it hooks right into your home systems, you know, like if you're online or wireless or whatever, it gets access.
Okay.
So, and that's what you want to do. You want to ask for any of these new products that you buy, and I'd search online as well. And you know, you can Google this stuff, and you know, when you're searching for a new TV or a new computer, go in and Google everything you can, because the person selling you that piece of equipment may not know.
I was going to say that. My experience with salespeople is that they don't know a lot of things like that. They wouldn't be able to accurately answer. So it really means doing the research, doing the homework to understand it. And even then, it would probably require a few phone calls to know where the data is going.
Absolutely. So, you know, I wouldn't, you know, salespeople aren't always knowledgeable, or we can't trust that they would be telling us, you know, something that might deter us from purchasing. So we have to do a lot of that ourselves. And, you know, it's funny, we would be Googling this information, and Google would be tracking what we're Googling. So it's, you know, it's a crazy thing. I know that, you know, when I go online and I'm looking for something or Googling something, sometimes I will get ads pop up, you know, seconds later. And I think it's the quickness of how they're tracking us.
Yes.
It's almost immediate.
I have a story. My neighbor was telling me that he was using, he has a smartphone, and he was on the phone using it and talking to someone about a recording artist, and they both, you know, the person he was talking to had different opinions. One really liked the person, the other person wasn't so fond of the recording artist. And so they were just having a little chit-chat. When he got home and he logged onto his computer, he had, he said, at least four things pop up about that recording artist.
Yes.
Which made him think, who is listening in on my conversation? Where is that data going? And it happened very quickly, within a 15-minute time period. Then he said another time he was not on the phone. It was not powered off, but he was not on his phone. And instead of, well, he was having another conversation about something, and he said again when he logged onto the computer, within a few minutes, he started getting all these pop-ups about what he was having a conversation about. And he said never before in both instances had he ever had pop-ups. So it led him to believe that when he was on the phone talking to somebody, and then also another time when he was not on the phone but the phone was not powered off, he was having a conversation with somebody in his house, that the pop-ups came. So it led him to start inquiring of some high-level IT professionals, and they said, yes, your smartphone, your smart TV is always collecting data on you, is always listening, unless you have it powered off. If it's powered off, it cannot do it. But if it's on and not being used, just like a TV, they said, could be off. His TV was not on. The TV would be off, he said. This is what the IT professional said. The TV can be off, but if it's not unplugged, you must unplug it to protect conversations in your home.
Yeah,
so it can
ridiculous.
Be off. And that man said he keeps his TV plugged into a power surge protector. So that he can easily, and his you know, the router, not the router, but the, what is it called, what Comcast or other internet companies would use for the, for accessing the internet in your smart TV. He said, unless you power off everything, then it could be turned off. You might not have your TV on, but it is listening to you, and it's picking up your data. And he said the only way is to power it off. So because he keeps his on a protector, all he has to do is push a button, a surge protector, push a button, and he said he keeps it off all the time unless he's going to watch TV. Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Yes, it is.
And, you know, the thing is, you know, what if it gets to the point where people are tracking who's watching Fox, who's watching CNN? I mean, you know, this is just...
I'm sure they are. I would think that they're already doing that.
Yes.
Why wouldn't they be?
It really is Big Brother. And then, you know, it makes it so much easier to target us. I was just at an amazing conference, and one of the speakers said that people will take the easiest path. If something's difficult, you know, they may put it off a little bit longer, or they may get intimidated or whatever. And so, you know, human nature, we're pretty easy to get at, quite frankly,
right.
And be swayed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think we just need to be aware of this. And I don't think people need to be totally paranoid, but they need to be aware.
They need to be aware. But we're going to take a quick segment break. We're going to come back in a few moments talking to Lorraine Justice about our smartphone or smart TV and how to take care of our data so that we're in control. Be back in a moment.
Radio Your Way. HealthyLife.net.
This is Margaret McCraw. You're listening to Business Life Works. And today we are addressing the topic, is your smart home spying on you? We have Lorraine Justice with us. She's a PhD and author of the new book, The Future of Design. And that's not the full title of your book. It's The Future of Design. And what's the rest of it, Lorraine? Help me out here.
Global Innovation for a Complex Future.
There we go. We do have a subtitle. So, Lorraine, let's give our listeners your website and tell us what you're offering on your website, or just, you know, what you offer on the whole in case somebody would like to access or get in touch with you.
That's great. Thank you. So it's www.lorrainejustice.com. And you're more than welcome to contact me about this subject, and I'll help wherever I can. I do a lot of speaking and a lot of deep dives with corporations on where, you know, what is the experience that people want to have and or don't want to have. So mm-hmm. it's really about designing our future, which is how the book came about.
Good. Wonderful. So I want to talk a little bit about the iCloud and just how secure is having data in the iCloud. I mean, it's wonderful to be able to have it elsewhere and not just simply stored on a tangible personal computer or external hard drive, but to be able to have our data up in the cloud. I know I have data in the cloud, as most people or many people do, and I run a healthcare facility, a mental health services, and so I've gone to great lengths to protect people's data, secure it, create encrypted files, and use encrypted email, things that would be more secure. But I do wonder, the data in the cloud, is there something we don't know about that as well, and how it could be accessed by others?
Well, again, this conference that I just came from, which was excellent, it was TWIN in Chicago, the data folks who were there were saying, if it's built by a human, it's hackable. So I use the cloud, too. Most companies do. A lot of people do now. But we kind of forget or don't have an awareness that, yes, it's hackable. Something can happen to it. And, you know, it's not that secure. It's not. So you may need to work around it. I was happy to hear you say that you protect people's data and names, you know, if you do send something up. And that's really the best way to do it, to, you know, try to protect other people from having their data be distributed. But, no, I think everything's hackable.
Right, of course, yes. Well, I just wonder what else we need to do to create protection and what else you might recommend to me, you know?
Yes. Well, there are a few things, and it's amazing how public opinion can sway what corporations do. And I think they need to hear from us, whether it's an opinion piece or op-ed piece in the newspaper or an email or letter saying, hey, I don't like what's going on here, and I'm going to look for some other type of service or product. You know, we have to let them know. We have to personally push back. And that's what people are starting to do. I mean, they're starting to invest around companies who are doing the right thing. And we'll see that more and more with the younger generation, but it's catching on. And that works. The other thing, contact your congressmen, your politicians, let them know as well that we're headed down a slippery slope.
Yes. Well, the other thing is, you know, you mentioned you've worked for China, and you've lived in Asia for 7 years. Do they have the same concerns as us?
No, not at all. In fact, there are cameras in every city covering every square inch in China, and they know the cameras are there. And they also know their data is collected, and it's something that they just know. It's in their culture. But, you know, right now, it's not harming them from getting the medical care they want or whatever. However, they are instituting something called a number system for citizenship. It's almost like a credit card score or a credit rating. You know, and if you do good, your number's higher. If you, you know, don't pay your bills or if you do something wrong, you can get a lower number, and that will determine a lot. So that's, I can't imagine Americans living with that system. We don't even like our credit rating system. So, you know, but they're trying to control the population, and it's a massive problem, and we may not agree with how they're doing that, but it's for those people to speak up and engage with their government.
Right, right. Interesting. It's all very, very interesting. Well, what else would you advise us on in terms of the issues with this? You know, the whole thing with Facebook, and I know many people who have closed down their accounts with Facebook or Instagram or even LinkedIn, and just was so turned off by the data and accessing it and accessing pictures and personal information that they have really just shut down everything. And yet I don't know if that's the best approach. It's very hard today to run a business and not have a Facebook account, a LinkedIn account. It depends on the type of business, of course, but if you are reaching the general public or outside of your local district, you have to depend on computers and internet and reaching people that way. If it's a mom-and-pop store local and you're counting on people locally and word of mouth, then that's a whole different story. But for a business growing or an internet business, I run a school online to be life coaches and health and wellness practitioners. So we reach out to people around the world. We get students from all over the world, and yet we have to rely on, you know, social media for that. So let's take a little time and start talking about social media. What are your thoughts on that? How would you advise us in terms of our use of social media?
Well, I think a good line of reasoning, and we've heard this before, is don't post anything you'll be ashamed of 10 years later, because it will certainly be out there. But the thing that we often overlook and aren't saying about social media is how good it is for our mental health to keep in touch with people we want to keep in touch with.
Right.
I'm online with people through Facebook, with people that I love, but maybe I haven't seen them for years. But it doesn't matter. It makes me feel like I get to still be a part of their life and keep up with them and interact with them. So that aspect of, you know, because we don't have a big social, you know, a lot of people don't we don't have the same generations and communities living together like we used to in the past. But on the other hand, you know, when you look at social media and the downside of mental health, especially for a lot of younger people, they can be very affected because they're comparing themselves to other people. And those people are going to put their best foot forward, you know, the great vacations, the new car, the, you know, weight loss. And that can be terribly crushing for someone who mentally, you know, might not have the strength to, you know, just realize, put all of that in context and perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and then we look at addictions for everything from games to checking our email. And,
right.
you know, where does that end? And so we've got a lot of smart people looking at these issues. We've got, even in education now, when we, you know, when our students design games, that the question of ethics comes up. It's, you know, do you realize this may be an addictive product, and how do you feel about that? And so, you know, we explore that in education, and now companies have to, well.
Companies have to what?
Have that reasoning as well. They need to look at what is being developed and, you know, what is it addicting? How will they deal with the public outcry from things like that, because there will be.
Lauren, we're going to take a quick break because that's a topic I want to explore further. So let's take a quick break.
Okay.
We're going to come back, and we're talking today to Lorraine Justice, and the topic is your smart home spying on you?
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
This is Margaret McCraw. You're listening to Business Life Works, produced by HealthyLife.net. And today we're speaking with Lorraine Justice. She's the author of the new book called The Future of Design. Lorraine is a former dean and professor at the School of Design at the Rochester Institute of Technology. And she is a very busy lady doing consulting work, helping us with the topic of, is your smart home and phone spying on you? Lorraine, this is a fascinating topic, and we wrapped up our last segment talking about, you know, the ethics, business ethics of some of the products that are being created, being sold, being marketed. I do want to talk a bit about, you know, products being addicting, and you started to address that before our break. So let's come back to that topic. What would you like to share with us on that?
Well, as I was saying, you know, when we are, I'm a professor, and when we have students design software programs, especially games, mm-hmm. we need to bring up the fact that it could be addictive. And how do they feel about that? And is there another way to approach that game? You know, where are the reward systems? But, you know, so many things are addicting. Alcohol, food, drugs, on and on. But now our software can be very addicting. And how many times do people check their email to see if they've gotten a response or whatever? It's that reward system in our brain. I call it this isn't a technical term, the lizard part of our brain that gets addicted, and we just go after it and after it. And mm-hmm. so at least now we bring it up in classes when we're teaching, and the students have to be aware, and there's a real discussion around ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that said, will people change the types of products they're designing? Possibly. Some students have said, no, this is wrong to make this addicting. We want it to be a great experience. We want them to enjoy it, but so maybe they get different kinds of feedback. Maybe, you know, there isn't like a quick enough response. But again, it depends on the game and the design and the designer.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Well, I think the whole business ethics topic is a huge topic. People have a different perspective on some of these things, and I guess what I wonder is, as a country, do we have anybody really looking at some of these things as a broader perspective, or is this just being managed company by company? Not that it should be controlled, or not that I'm suggesting it should
right.
be controlled,
yeah.
but is there any agency that's at least looking at it from a health standpoint, and then just like you would look at any addiction, right, to substance,
yes.
to food, to anything, and then posing some questions and guiding companies
right.
to consider certain things. Is anybody doing that?
Well, you know, I think it's spread across different organizations and groups. You know, we certainly have parents groups looking out and, you know, for what their children are using online and all that. But, you know, their voice can only go so far. Do we have regulation? Not really. We have, you know, things around pornography. You know, we know that legally someone can take action. But as far as a game being addictive, it's up to an individual to sue or, you know, have a lawsuit in place. And so I would say no, because, you know, there isn't a major oversight of what's going on. But I am glad to see ethics now coming up again in a big way in the universities and making the students aware of, you know, what's right, what's wrong, you know, what they're doing is affecting someone's life.
So that's wonderful. How about people who are not attending universities? How about the person who's day-to-day working, you know, wherever they have a job, taking buses instead of owning a car? They're living in our society as anybody who would be a university student. How do they access that information? Who tells them it's addictive?
Well, that's the problem. In some cases, they're not getting that information. Mm-hmm. They're not, when does an alcoholic become aware that they're an alcoholic?
Right.
Yeah, it can be, you know, sometimes you can't pinpoint that, and there's not an awareness. And it may be not too late, but it may be pretty far in for them
right.
to adjust their behavior. So, no, that's why it's a problem, especially with anything addictive.
Right.
I think that, again, we're going to have to rely on public outcry. Look at what happened with opioids, and other addictive things in society. And it's, you know, we don't have any one leader saying, you know, no, this is wrong. And that may be a good thing because it could swing the other way.
Right.
So, it's really going to be up to all of us to be aware and help where we can.
Well, I think, you know, that I can envision in the future nonprofits that would be focused on strictly educating people who might not receive information otherwise. There's so much information that the people who go to universities, colleges, who go beyond high school, have access to information that so many individuals don't. And it's been brought to my attention, the mental health programs that I run are very focused on individuals who have medical assistance instead of private insurance. And so that population is, they're not in universities. They're not in colleges. They're on a different path. They're receiving their information differently, yet they do seem to have smartphones. They assume they have some technology in their homes, not necessarily computers. They do have access to some things, and yet I find that their knowledge and their understanding is very different not because of intelligence, but because of their circles. It's very different than the person who goes
right.
on to school. So we have to take a quick segment break. Let's come back and talk about some other things. We'll be back in just a moment talking to Lorraine Justice, the author of the new book called The Future of Design. And our topic today is your smart home spying on you?
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
This is Margaret McCraw, host of Business Life Works. Is your smart home spying on you is our topic for today. We are here with Lorraine Justice, PhD, the author of the new book called The Future of Design. And Lorraine, take our listeners to your website. Tell them where they can buy your book, please, because you're offering wonderful information for all of us to learn more about and educate ourselves. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's great to be on the show. I appreciate it because I think there needs to be an awareness and more discussion about technology in our homes. And
yeah.
one of the critical things right now that people really need to weigh in on is how much technology do you really want in your home? And
mm-hmm.
technology can stress people out or it can make them feel they're really in touch with the rest of society.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at this generationally, older people, and I'm saying this generally, older generations may not want as much technology in their home. And you might have sons and daughters and grandsons and daughters trying to get, you know, grandma and grandpa to use this or that device, and it might be more stressful for them then they realize, although some of them may welcome it. So they have to really individually gauge, you know, what do these people want in their home? What do they want to use? And are you causing more stress and complicating their lives?
Right.
And then, as I said, on the flip side, those of us who love technology, we'll try a lot of things, and we find it exciting, and we feel current with the world, and connected, and so we get more of a pleasurable feeling rather than anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Well, I think, again, no matter who we are or what we're doing in our work or in our home, we really need to ask all the questions that you've brought up today, and that is, where's our data going, what's being collected, and where's it going? And we need to pay attention to the apps that we're using on our smartphones. And, you know, I don't have the answers to that. Do you? I mean, where else, who's using my information about my location? You know, I get that question all the time. May we use your information about your location? Well, sometimes, certainly for an Uber, you need the app to use. You know, it's
yeah.
helpful for them to access your location. But do I want them always accessing my location? No, not when I'm
right.
not using an Uber, right? Or
right.
a Lyft.
Right.
So being able to manage that, and sometimes we don't get that choice. It might
right.
say, it might come back and give you the question, only if I'm using the app. And then you can
right.
say yes or no, right?
Right.
But sometimes I don't see that question come back. It'll just say, may we use your location? Maybe it's something that you want to use, like Yelp, where you want a meal delivered, food delivered. So, yes, it would be nice to have them use your location. But I don't want them using my location when I'm not using that app. And it may not come back and give me the choice to deny that if I've said yes once.
Right.
So who's looking at the, you know, legally, or who's looking at that in terms of the different apps? Anybody?
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Margaret.
No, who's looking at that is my question in terms of the apps. What parameters do they have when they develop these and put these out on the market? Are there, you know, anybody regulating things like that for privacy?
Well, right now I can tell you that company PR firms are looking at this because those apps that don't give you that option to say only when I'm, you know, ordering this, if they don't give you that option, I know I personally don't like that company as much as I could. I find it kind of like a rotten practice or a bad practice that I might be taking advantage of, and I won't use that app again. I won't use that product again. And so companies are getting a little bit smarter that they need to treat us better, give us more options. I know even when I try to unscribe from something, it's so difficult to find the area where to unscribe with some companies that it's such a bad reflection on them.
Right, and it is.
Yeah, yeah. But who's looking at this? Actually, there are a lot of people doing research on this, and I think a lot of it will come into the general news area, and that's the other thing, the fake news. That's, you know, I read some other studies where it seems like the younger generation, they got the message loud and clear that there's a lot of fake news out there, but some of the other generations might not have. And it's really around, you know, questioning beliefs and that kind of thing. So I'm hopeful that the next generations coming will question a lot of this, will demand better service, better upfront honesty about what a company's doing and so on. I had heard that Mark Zuckerberg was speaking to Congress, but it was a closed session. And I thought, oh, come on, you know, you need to involve the people. And we need access to that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. We do need access. Well, I think this topic just needs to continue. And I'm sure, your book will be very popular. I know it's new on the market. Where can our listeners buy your book?
They can go to Amazon.com,
okay,
and look up The Future of Design, Lorraine okay. Justice.
Okay. And your website?
Yeah. It's www.lorrainejustice.com. I'll spell that. It's LorraineJustice.
Okay.
And
great.
I'd love to hear from you.
Great. Well, I thank you for being on our show. I'm sure in 6 months things will be changing. There'll be new information. And stay in touch with me because I want to periodically bring you back. Okay, Lorraine?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much.